Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Keeping workers safe from intense heat, our Labor Department now crafting new rules, the grassroots effort that made all of this happen. Meanwhile, labor now tying immigration reform to upgrading our infrastructure. And today on the show, the latest from the Heat and Frost Insulators and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Welcome to the Wednesday, September 22nd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. You can listen to the show anytime you want, 24/7. Pete Almini is going to be our first guest. No stranger to the show. He comes from the Heat and Frost Insulators. Website is Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. And today we are going to pick up on climate change, climate, jobs, weather, infrastructure. Pete says there's a lot of confusion about what is pragmatic, what is realistic. And then you throw politics in, and it all gets pretty confusing. So, how does all this relate to mechanical insulation? Well, let me tell you this. 70% of our energy resources are consumed by buildings. You know, we think about cars, and I know they're going to electric vehicles and all that, but there's a lot of buildings, 70%, a majority, that are wasting fuel. And that's where mechanical insulation comes in. You get that done. I mean, there's a cost up front, just like when you insulate your home. You pay to get better windows, you put insulation in the walls, and obviously if you're going to stay in that home for a long time, you are going to reap the benefits. The same goes in the business community. Energy efficient technologies. We'll get into the basics here. What is climate change? What is a climate job? How's our infrastructure related to the weather? Mechanical insulation, says Pete, is not the be-all, end-all, but it could be used in conjunction with other technologies, and that's what we're going to get to on the show. Demos Demopoulos, he was on the show, I want to say, back in June. He comes to us from the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. He's Secretary Treasurer and Executive Officer of Local 553 out of New York City. They represent drivers and other workers in the oil, dairy, school bus, and bakery industries. They are the oldest Teamster local in New York. And check this. They began as a union of Teamsters transporting coal on horse-drawn carts. Now, that was a different time in America. That just shows you how long they've been around. We're going to talk about a strike at United Metro Energy that's been going on for 156 days. We touched on this back in June, and this is pretty much an update because Demos' local is expanding charges at the National Labor Relations Board against United Metro Energy, which is owned by a billionaire, John Katsimatidis. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Well, the owner of this company fired another striker last week. He has permanently replaced eight union activists since the strike began at the Brooklyn Oil Terminal in April. The union originally filed charges at the Labor Board in May, alleging that the company was targeting union activists for permanent replacement and is now asking the federal agency to add the latest firing to its ongoing investigation. Demos is quoted as saying, "These immigrant workers went on strike because they wanted equal pay with others in their industry, and they were fired." So, Katsimatidis should do what is right, rehire these workers and agree to a fair union contract so they can provide for their families. This is all posted on the Teamster website, teamster.org. Crazy what's going on. Again, a rich owner taking advantage of people. I want to do a shout out to a new local. Actually, it's not a new local. They're getting new members. It's 186 in Ventura, California, a group of 50 bottlers and sanitation workers at a Dairy Farmers of America plant in Ventura who makes Starbucks pre-made coffee products sold in retail stores. I've seen many of those. They voted to join Local 186. The vote was 33-4. Abel Garcia is the secretary treasurer of Local 186. Abel said the company recently modernized the plant and laid off half the workers. Since it reopened, they increase hours to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, three shifts a day. So there's a big problem about excessive work hours. Trying to get days off was like pulling teeth. Local 186 was able to secure a neutrality agreement. And Garcia says, we look forward to addressing the workers' concerns about excessive hours and more time off on a first contract. So lay off the workers, make them work longer, harder, 12 hours a day, and don't give them any breaks. Don't get any time off. That's why they want a union. All right, the White House has announced that it plans to develop a federal rule that will require employers to keep workers safe from extreme heat, something workplace safety advocates have sought for years. It was accelerated, though, this year because of what was happening, especially in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, normally in the spring and early summer, temperatures there are 55, 60, 65, maybe topping 70. This year, 115, 120. Something is wrong with the planet. I hope more people understand that. Anyway, the rule will be crafted by the Labor Department's Occupational Safety and Health Administration and will apply to both indoor and outdoor workplaces. The administration did not release details on what requirements the rule will include, saying it will take the first steps in the rulemaking process next month, which is just, what, less than 2 weeks away. President Biden issued a statement saying he was mobilizing the administration to address extreme heat, noting that heat waves brought record temperatures this summer to areas like the Pacific Northwest, where hundreds of people died. He went on to say rising temperatures pose an imminent threat to millions of American workers exposed to the elements, to kids in schools without air conditioning, to seniors in nursing homes without cooling resources. The federal heat standard set by OSHA would be significant for a number of reasons. It would lay out in clear detail what an employer's obligations are in protecting workers from high heat and give the agency stronger ground from which to issue fines. It would also set minimum requirements in every state, most of which have no occupational rules when it comes to heat. David Michaels, who ran OSHA under former President Obama, said the announcement could immediately make workers safer by changing employers' expectations. This is what he said. Employers have a more clear understanding of what they need to do and what's required of them. But the fact that OSHA has said very clearly that they're moving toward a heat standard also will have a significant impact. Employers realize when a standard is being planned, well, guess what? They start to respond even before the standard is issued. Very good point. In addition to developing a rule, the White House also announced that OSHA would begin a new heat enforcement program, carrying out more workplace inspections on days when the heat index exceeds 80 degrees. Such a program could result in fines if workers are not given adequate breaks, water, or access to shade, especially on very hot days. without a specific heat rule in place yet. The agency will continue to rely on what's known as the General Duty Clause, a catch-all requirement that says employers have a general responsibility to keep workers safe from harm. OSHA tends to wield that clause sparingly, however, since employers often fight such citations. Boy, there's a history of that. Now, the new heat standard, once it's issued, would give OSHA a much stronger tool to address heat hazards. The inclusion of indoor workplaces in the rule will also broaden its impact, affecting not just workers on farms and construction sites, but inside warehouses, restaurants, and anywhere heat is a problem. So it's not just outside. And those warehouses, I know Amazon warehouses have been really, really sweltering this past summer. OSHA said 43 workers died of heat exposure. This was in 2019, and 2,400 others suffered heat-related injuries and illnesses, but acknowledged those numbers are likely to be undercounted. I would agree with that one. Labor Secretary Marty Walsh said in a statement that high heat threatens millions of workers, both indoors and outdoors. Now, there's already a precedent for heat standards on the state level. California put a series of requirements in place for outdoor workers. That started in 2006, and that happened after several farm workers died on the job. Oregon issued a temporary emergency standard earlier this summer following their historic heat wave. In both California and Oregon, those standards are enforced by the state rather than the federal government. We have a comment here from the National Council on Occupational Safety and Health, NCOSH. We've had them on the show a number of times, and their leaders said that years of grassroots organizing is paying off as the Biden administration made these major steps this week. Jessica Martinez, co-executive director of National NCOSH, said, "When we organize, we win. The danger to workers from extreme heat due to climate change has been known for some time. Workers, our unions, workers' centers, National NCOSH, and many partners and allies have been organizing and advocating for real protections for workers for years. And finally, the White House is listening, which means we can reduce risk and save lives." That's what it's all about. The AFL-CIO is calling on lawmakers in Washington to address our immigration. And I'll tell you, this is such a controversial issue. I mean, it goes back years and years and years. And it's kind of interesting what they're doing here. Because, you know, the campaign that they have for our infrastructure is Build Back Better with unions. And that's to push the PRO Act. And they said, if you get the PRO Act moving, you tie in infrastructure investment and citizenship. You know what that means? You get jobs with rights for all. Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO, sent an email out yesterday, and she said it real simply. The best way to strengthen our democracy and economy is by empowering working people, no exceptions. However, millions of undocumented immigrants who are vital to our economic recovery still live in fear because of our outdated and inhumane immigration system. Well, it's time to put an end to this injustice, she said. All people who live and work deserve a job with full rights and protection. So, take this time to tell your senators to pass a budget that includes a broad pathway to citizenship. She pointed out it's been nearly 35 years since our last path to citizenship, and working families can't wait any longer. So here's a number. It's for our senators in Washington, 833-770-1697. Let me repeat that. 833-770-1697. Invest in our infrastructure, and they're very close. We're going to have Bill Samuel on the show tomorrow, Government Affairs Director for the Labor Federation, and we'll find out when that vote's coming up. So you get the bipartisan infrastructure deal and come up with a pathway of citizenship. Because so many immigrants built America, when you think about it, going back to the turn of the century, the 1900s, 1800s. So call your senators. That number again is 866-770-1697. All right, we're going to break. Coming up next, Pete Almini and the Heat and Frost Insulators.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, celebrating 50 years, and you can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars. Always enjoy talking to this man. Pete Almini is his name. He comes to us from the Heat and Frost Insulators. And the website, real simple, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. He comes to us from the great state of New Jersey. Pete Almini, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, brother?
Hey, how you doing today?
I have to ask you, I know you want to talk about climate change. I was talking about the Labor Department just a few minutes ago, how Biden instructed them this week to come up with some standards on heat exhaustion. And some states have it, but there's no federal standards. And you've seen what's going on in America. I have to ask you, did you get some of that crazy weather that hit New York City? We saw a couple of weeks ago that flooded all the subways. I think like over 50 people died. Were you part of that?
I was next to it. Personally, my home, my office were not affected by it, but we were affected by it all around us. We definitely were part of it, but thank God we didn't get, personally, we weren't affected by it, but our communities were. Yeah, caught us. It was very shocking to get that much rain in a short amount of time.
Yeah, yeah. And once again, our first responders, union brothers and sisters, I saw one bus driver who's driving his bus with about 2 feet of water in it. I mean, he just kept going, I mean, I tell you, talk about heroes in a situation where there's a calamity like that. But, you know, getting back to these heat standards, several states have it. Like I said, no federal standards. But you're telling me that the Heat and Frost Insulators had kind of a plan put together some years ago. Can we touch on that real quick, Pete?
Sure. It goes back 15, 20 years ago when I was deeply involved in apprenticeship and training. We put together a small manual that protected our workers from heat. And as insulators and a lot of construction workers as well, we're working in plants and power plants and manufacturing. where it's not just the weather that's hot, it's just the environment of the facility that's hot. Sometimes we're working on top of boilers, we're working in refineries, and working in temperatures that exceed 100 degrees in the summertime is quite common. And especially when the weather gets that hot, now you're working in environments that are 110, 120, and sometimes even hotter than that. And we put together a rather robust training program that was implemented in our apprenticeship program that goes under the title of worker safety, of how to work in such environments, how to cool your body, the importance of having liquids, drinking liquids, and that's not beer, coffee, or tea. Those beverages take the water out of your system. They're called diuretics, and they take it out of your system. Your body needs water to want to cool down, and more importantly, it needs to maintain the muscle tissue and lubricate the joints. That's why when you have trolley horses in your legs, typically at night, that's an indication you're not getting enough liquids into your body. So being able to hydrate and the importance of it is part of the training, and also the warning signs of when your body is having difficulty cooling down and you get into a situation that's extreme danger. You don't want to have your core temperature of your body reach too high. It goes into heat stroke and heat exhaustion.
Once again, this is another example of how unions take the lead on issues, and this is clearly a safety issue. And I'm just thinking to myself here, Pete, you might be getting a call from Marty Walsh in the Labor Department because they're working on these standards right now. They may want to take a look at what you crafted some years ago. Just thinking here. That being said, Pete, let's talk about our subject today, and that subject is climate change. And I like what you wrote. What's pragmatic, what's realistic, and what will meet our political objectives? And there's a lot of confusion on this issue, so I'm just going to turn it over to you. What do you think is going to pan out with the debate that's going on? And I know labor is in the middle of it all. Go ahead.
Well, yes, and labor should be right in the middle of it because it involves a tremendous amount of work for construction. And we talk about work, we're talking about the infrastructure part of the of our society that has been neglected over the last 50 years. And I want to be able to talk about infrastructure when we talk about construction, because there's a lot of terms that are being used right now in the news and multimedia and media outlets. And some of these terms are getting confusing of what actually they are. Let's start at the top. We talk about climate change. And somehow climate change is a term that got adopted from global warming. And I guess the theory of changing the name was trying to get a little more focused on it. Global warming means that the temperature of the Earth is going to increase. And this only has to increase by 1 degree on the average. That will make a large difference. And a lot of that's affected by the ozone layer, ozone layers. There are several layers. And the ozone layer possibly is thinning out, and that's allowing UV rays to come from the sun unfiltered, and it's eliminating some of the insulation, if you will, around our Earth. And because of that, it's raising the temperature very so slightly, but that affects the polar caps, North and South Pole, and a lot of water, that's ice, is melting, and it's raising the sea levels around the world. Because of that, it changes weather patterns. Mm-hmm. Now, the debate that's been argued for the last 20 years is the thinning of the ozone layer. Is it directly related to pollution that we are emitting into the atmosphere, or is it naturally occurring? And that's a debate that will continue. Obviously, pollution and emissions from our buildings and transportation is not helping the situation. So all of us around the world as a global commodity is trying to eliminate pollution and reduce harmful emissions. That's going to help the environment. It's going to help the climate change or global warming. Now, whether it's going to happen or not naturally, or whether we're, again, it's man-made and we're inducing this, is a whole nother subject. But environmentally, we have to do our share to be able to help the environment and reduce emissions. And one thing that's frustrating, I don't hear much talk about it, is that the United States, we have been proactive and we have reduced our emissions steadily from the year 2000. And even then, it was slightly higher than it was 1970. But the United States only releases 15% of the world's harmful emissions. Now, 15% is not as good as 14%, not as good as 10%, not as good as zero. And we all have to work hard to reduce that. But this is a global issue. We have countries like China, other third world countries, industrial countries don't have the emissions regulations that we have, and they are the biggest violators of the environment. And when we talk about climate change and how the climate is changing, and we talk about emissions, we have to realize that this is a global situation and not just one for the United States. So we, with this crazy weather that the Northeast has experienced, just as you alluded to a few minutes ago, down south we've had hurricanes. Out in the West we've had these tremendous forest fires. And there's a lot of emphasis being put onto the weather and how we can what's the effect of that? Well, and there's a lot of talk about infrastructure and how we have to improve the infrastructure. And I even heard news reports on how infrastructure is going to change the weather, and that's where it's not true. Infrastructure is our ability to have our roads and our bridges and utilities and mass transit all working properly to handle our society's needs as well as the weather. We need to pass legislation, as Congress is working on right now, that really is going to focus and be able to spend a substantial amount of resources to improve our infrastructure. We need to make sure our roads are in good shape and safe, and many of them are not. And just patching potholes is not a it's not enough. We have bridges that are literally rusting and falling apart, and hopefully we can get them modified and restructured before there's major collapses. We have to look at our utilities, the power grid, making sure that we have enough power in this country to supply all our communities, also at peak times. And that's a major concern right now in the power generation industry is we have an energy crisis. We're not able to provide enough energy for our country. We have the water systems being able to provide fresh water. That doesn't seem to get a lot of headlines, but experts that I've read have emphasized the fact that delivery of fresh water in this country and parts of this country is going to be an issue in decades to come. And sewage and drainage is another problem. We've had in New Jersey from the hurricane that hit New Orleans and New Jersey and New York and even down in the Gulf region. Unfortunately, people have drowned by the massive amount of rainwater and storm surge, mainly because that it was rain came down at an unbelievable rate per hour, 2, 3, 5 inches per hour. And the truth of the matter is our infrastructure was not able to drain all of that water out in enough time. And not only was there millions and billions of property damage, people lost their lives. most people lost their lives by being trapped in their vehicles, and the vehicles were swept away. And unfortunately, that's a very tragic death. But we have been building so much in the last 50 years. When we build a building and you have a parking lot, remember that when water hits those areas, it no longer is allowed to seep into the ground and have natural drainage as it would on soil. So the water has to run off somewhere, and it has to run off into a sewer system and have proper drainage. And if the drainage is not conducive enough, well, it's going to back up and you have flooding. So we have to be able to have improvements to our infrastructure, not to change the weather. We have to deal with the weather as it comes. We're still going to have hurricanes. We're still going to have tornadoes. We're still going to have forest fires. We're still going to have extreme colds. We're still going to have extreme heat. But we have to develop engineered mechanical systems called infrastructure to be able to handle that.
Yeah, yeah. And it can be done. I mean, that's the important thing. And they're trying to make some things happen in Washington. I know there's some legislation that's going to address much of what you talked about. Maybe not all of it, yes, but a lot of it. Pete, I got to take a quick break here. Pete Almini joining us from the Heat and Frost Insulators. We'll continue our discussion on climate change and how this relates to mechanical insulation. Demos Demopoulos, on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, they got a brutal strike going on in New York City. He's going to address that later in the show. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, we're available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Let's go back to our live line. We're talking about climate change. We're talking about infrastructure. It's all tied together. Pete Almini joining us on our live line with the Heat and Frost Insulators, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. Pete, we wrapped up our discussion, our first part on the infrastructure legislation that hopefully is going to be approved on in the next couple of weeks. In fact, we'll get more on that when we talk with Bill Samuel tomorrow from the AFL-CIO. But I would imagine at this juncture, you have read parts of what they're talking about. And from what I understand, and various trades have said the same thing, this is pretty solid. It's a pretty good start. What's your take on what's happened so far?
Absolutely, it's a fantastic start to modify and to reestablish our infrastructure, and the bipartisan bill of the first part of the infrastructure bill does that. It addresses the true hardline issues of infrastructure. The roads, the bridges, the utilities, are going to be addressed, and it's going to be addressed with millions and millions of dollars, as it should. I mean, let's not wait until the bridge collapses before we have to rebuild it. Let's make sure our electrical grid is up to snuff before it fails. I'm looking outside my window right now, and I'm looking at power lines on telephone poles going through maple trees and oak trees. And it's pretty thick. It's only a matter of time before a branch or those trees come down. It's going to affect those power lines.
Right.
So it's a massive undertaking, but maybe we should start building the existing power lines and get them underground, as we do in newer construction, of course. But anything that's older, we're still using telephone poles. Let's get them underground.
And also, let's retrofit the buildings. I was reading earlier, Pete, that 70% of our energy resources are consumed by buildings, and that's obviously where the heat and frost insulators come in, right?
You're exactly correct. As insulators, we live in the world of energy efficiency. And let's make the energy resources that we have now and in our future, let's maximize the use of that. Let's reduce the cost. Let's maximize the energy that we're using. And at the same time, let's also reduce the harmful greenhouse gas emissions that are coming from these buildings. The longer that the boiler is running, the longer that the air conditioner unit has to run to make our environments comfortable, we're wasting energy and hurting the environment. We're hurting the global warming or climate change. Mm-hmm. And we have to do our best to be able to reduce the emissions and reduce the use of our buildings. Studies have shown that 10 to 30% of buildings does not have proper insulation in it. And we're just wasting money. We're just wasting money, throwing it out the window, literally. And as the mechanical insulators, we're trying to get the message out, as we are right now, of if anyone is serious about climate change and global warming and energy sources, before you look out your window and you profess we have to make change, look within your building. Look what you have the power to control. Let's make sure that your building is energy efficient. And there's many things to be able to look at. One of the many, many items is the mechanical insulation. As the LMCT and our contractors and our unions, we can provide professional expert help on helping a facility owner look at a strategic plan to look at their mechanical insulation and be able to look at the improvements that are necessary. And the improvements, sure, you have to pay someone to be able to do it.
Right.
Hopefully you'll be using a union insulating contractor. But the good part of it, though, is that any improvements that you make to the mechanical insulation will probably pay for itself under 2 years. And after that, that building owner is going to see that as profit and is going to see that as money saved. It's a win-win for all.
Pete, let me ask you, are building owners at least starting to get this message? I mean, there's a lot that needs to be done. I understand that. But is it happening right now? Do they understand that they have to retrofit these buildings? They have to call people like yourself and say, what do I need to do to make my building energy efficient? Is that happening?
The short answer, and I like short answers, the short answer is no. And I'm working real hard with the international as the LMCT to get the word out to the decision makers, the people, the committees that make decisions based on their facility maintenance or their building maintenance, to understand the value and the power of the mechanical insulation. All too often, we look at the bigger items or what people think are the bigger items and fail to be able to understand the value of the mechanical system. As long as that room is staying cold, as long as that the room is staying warm, depending upon the time of the season, people don't realize and think about the mechanical insulation. If the air conditioner doesn't work, if the boiler doesn't work, oh, there's a problem, and you're going to pull in a mechanical contractor to fix the mechanical system. But not enough people are realizing the efficiency of those systems and how they work. So the short answer is no, and I'm working real hard to get the word out, be able to examine and look at your mechanical insulation system, and any improvements you make to it will pay for itself.
Well, Pete, I'm just hoping that more and more people are going to get the message with shows like this. I know you do a lot of outreach in the community where you are, and you've got an organization here with the Heat and Frost Insulators. You're tied in with the AFL-CIO. But this message needs to be heard because there's savings involved. I mean, like you said, I'm still blown away by the fact that you said in 2 years, the upfront costs are pretty much taken care of in 2 years. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, you did. And that's being very conservative. In most cases, within 6 months or under a year, the installation cost will return on the investment that was used. Yes.
Amazing. All right, let's drive everybody to the website, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. Climate change is here. It's real. And people have to take the lead on this and adapt to it as quickly as possible and save money at the same time. Makes a whole lot of sense. Okay, my friend, you take care. Keep up the great work that you're doing. We will obviously stay on this subject in many, many podcasts to come. So stay safe, stay in touch, and keep moving forward. Okay, brother?
All right. Thank you, Flash.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to link up with Demos Demopoulos with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters out of New York City. And they've got a strike going on since April. We'll talk about it next on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to New York City right now. Joining us on our live line is Demos Demopoulos on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, proud sponsor of this show. Demos is Secretary Treasurer and Executive Officer of Teamster Local 553 in New York City. They represent drivers and other workers in the oil, dairy, school bus, and bakery industries. I still can't get over the fact that they're the oldest Teamster local in New York. They began as a union of Teamsters transporting coal on horse-drawn carts. Wow. That's a long time ago.
Yes, it is.
Demos, thanks for joining us. Now, we checked in with you, I believe it was in June. And for the life of me, I didn't think this thing would still be going on. But we're talking about United Metro Energy, we've got a strike going on there, and the guy that owns the company, he's a billionaire, John Katsimatidis, and he's firing workers now that are striking, or what's going on here? This is absolutely ridiculous. Tell me the story.
It really is. And when we last spoke, I had no idea that we'd be speaking again. It'd still be going on. Last Sunday, it's been 5 months since we started the strike. You mentioned that he's a billionaire. Well, he's a billionaire at least three times over. One of the richest individuals in New York. Very successful. Started out from very meager beginnings and built himself up. And I applaud that. He comes from an immigrant family. Meanwhile, he's got 14 people standing outside his oil terminal in Brooklyn, New York, primarily immigrants looking for the same exact thing. And he's been picking them off one by one, maybe once a week or once every 10 days. Another guy gets a letter saying that he's been terminated. We had some sympathizer strikes from within, from another group that we have under contract. The minute they stood outside with us, immediately they got a text that their health care was being cut off for them and their family. So we have various ULP charges pending in Washington right now over that issue of threatening the workers, and also for sending out termination letters to permanently replace them.
So how many have been let go so far since this began over 150 days ago?
I believe that we're up to 8 now out of the 14 people.
Okay.
The latest one was just a few days ago, and we turned it over to our attorneys, and they added those onto the charges.
So does he just pick and choose, hey, you so-and-so, John Smith or whatever, you are fired today. I don't want to see you here anymore. Is that what he's doing?
Basically, yes. Basically, he is.
Unbelievable.
The attorney that he's using to negotiate with us that have been ongoing, but not really moving along, doesn't want to bridge any gaps. It's just like a wall that's been put up, and it's almost like they're just going through the motions. As you mentioned, we started out delivering coal by horse and wagon over 100 years ago. And a large part of our industry is representing the oil industry in New York. We have area standards throughout the whole city. And he was underpaying his people as much as 50% less than the rest of the industry. So we're not just doing this for those 14 workers, but we're doing it for the 1,000 other oil workers in New York City as well.
Well, Demos, what about the delivery of fuel, heating oil? And I'm reading that United Metro Energy, that terminal, distributes heating oil to New York City schools, hospitals, the transit authority, as well as area gas stations. Now, is that being held up right now because of the strike?
Unfortunately, it is not. I wish it was. But we're working on things because there are prevailing wage laws in the city and state of New York that we're looking to have enforced. We've been in touch with the proper authorities that oversee that, and we're hoping that that's going to make an impact.
Now, the people that he's firing, are they bringing replacement workers? Are there scabs involved? What's the story?
Yes, there are. Unfortunately, there are scabs involved. They sneak them in around the back to avoid scat the rat and our picket line. But yes, there are replacement workers, and that's a problem too. As you can imagine, this is hazardous material. There are ecological reasons why, environmental reasons that these men are very well trained, our people, and it's not something that you can learn in a few days or a week or a month, and these replacement workers do not have the same credentials or the experience to handle it safely in that terminal, and we're also making issue of that as well.
You know, similar situation. We addressed the Marathon Oil Refinery, and that's a Teamster refinery up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Now, they settled that dispute, but they did the same thing. They brought in people that were not qualified, and you're dealing with fuel. I mean, come on, this is explosive. You got to have some training on this kind of stuff. This is ridiculous. Hey. The good thing here, Demos, you got a union friendly National Labor Relations Board. You should know that by now. You got the majority there. And you've got a general counsel who is definitely on labor's side. So the charges are now sitting in Washington, the unfair labor practice charges?
Yes, they are. Yes, they're wrong. We're keeping our fingers crossed that we are going to get. And as you said, we do have a favorable board. I'm sure you know that President Biden had nominated, and she's now in place, Gwen Wilcox. And she's one of the board members, and I know her personally because we share our offices in the same building. So I know her for many, many years, and she's wonderful, wonderful attorney and a wonderful addition.
Any idea when a ruling will come down out of Washington? Are they keeping in touch with you on that?
Yeah, our attorneys are constantly talking to the everyone that's involved. But unfortunately, things don't happen as quickly as we need to. Sometimes we just have to be patient about that. But, you know, 5 months, the guys are still standing strong, and I'm very, very proud of them. I have to make mention particularly of my strike captain, Andre Solon, who's been instrumental on keeping the morale up. Also, we're getting a lot of support from local elected leaders at all levels of government. We've had Senator Schumer down at the strike line, which was a nice boost, and we expect that to continue. Also, we're getting a lot of support from different community groups, and as I said, some environmental groups as well. One name in particular I'd like to mention and thank is the River Keepers, which is concerned about clean water in the area and have done phenomenal work around New York City harbors and the rivers. And we got them keeping a close eye out of Newtown Creek, which is the way that the Katsimatidis gets his shipments of oil on barges.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of solidarity in New York. New Yorkers, they're tough. They're a tough breed. There's no question, especially I was talking earlier about the crazy weather that you guys experienced some weeks ago with all the flooded subways and everything. This is just
absolutely.
And then and you're dealing with
it. And it affected the terminal as well, because as you can imagine, you know, it's on the creek. It's a waterway where, as I said, the barges come in. The water rose very high. And we expect that some of the machinery that's supposed to separate the oil from the water before spilling into the creek, we believe that might not have been functional. So that's another thing that would help us out.
A lot of fires burning, respectively, in this situation.
They are.
All right.
I have to thank also, if you don't mind, the New York State AFL-CIO, Mario Salento's president. I'd like to thank the New York City Labor Council, my joint counsel, 16, Tommy Jaswali, and especially Jim Hoffa and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters for all the support they're giving me with a battery of people from strategic campaigns fighting every day and gathering information and helping me try and win this battle. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate you getting the word out, Flash.
Well, Demos, you know that you're going to win this struggle. It's unfortunately you have to go through this kind of thing, but hang in there, my brother. Stand tall, and we'll stay on this issue here at America's Workforce, okay?
And thank you so much, and for all the work that you do. Thank you.
You got it. Then, again, that's Teamster Local 553 out of Brooklyn, New York, on strike for over 150 days at the United Metro Energy Terminal. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Bill Samuel of the AFL-CIO and the local musicians talking solidarity. That's tomorrow. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.